Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 368 of the Roguecast, recorded April 12th, 2022, 27 Ways to Die.
It has finally happened. We're recording a weekly podcast again.
Yeah.
For at least 1 week.
I like our spotty availability. It's like Wi-Fi.
Oh. Everybody loves spotty Wi-Fi.
So what you're saying, we are the internet of 1999.
Yeah, that's right. We should begin with the awkward dial-up sound, that horrible sound.
You have mail.
Our younger listeners have no idea what we're talking about.
Yeah.
What are you talking about, younger listeners? We have no younger listeners.
Okay, well, Russell probably knows.
Listen, I have talked to some of
Russell
our customers who
knows.
Are youths.
Yep.
They are from the lands of the millennials.
Would you
and
call them youths?
Sometimes even Zoomers,
yep.
I think. So they're out there. They're out
yes,
there.
They are listening.
All right.
They're confused by many of the things we say.
So are we.
But God bless them. They're giving us a shot.
All right, so store news first. Magic pre-release for New Capenna is... I believe a week from Friday.
Yep.
And that should be fun. Free Comic Day is a week after that on a Saturday.
Yep.
I think. We're getting the comics rolling in. We should have a pretty good selection this year.
Yeah, we've already started, we've got boxes of them. We've counted off some of them and to make sure we're getting them all. And people know that you can go to www.freecomicbookday.com and see all the stuff.
Yep. This week is it's birthday week.
Yes.
Nick's birthday was yesterday,
yep.
As we record this.
Yep.
My birthday is next Sunday.
Right, and mine is September 26th.
And Dave's is September 26th. Dave couldn't get on board and be an April birthday like the rest of us.
Yeah, jot it down, though, for future reference, y'all.
You can't have three Aries running a comic shop. You believe in astrology, which I don't.
Yeah, well, it's clearly you and Nick are exactly alike.
Yes, we are identical. Mm. And Julie, who used to work here, also the same as us.
Yeah.
We're all three peas in a pod.
Sure.
Yeah. You and Julie have a little overlap.
That's true.
I like knives.
That's right. But Nick and Julie have overlap.
Unlike Julie, you are not a stilt walker from New Orleans.
That's true.
Don't even try to
I got nothing.
Convince me.
I got nothing.
Yeah.
We've
hired some interesting people.
We have. In fact, we have a new employee. If you haven't met her, you'll start seeing
true.
Her around.
That's true.
Sadly, part of that is because Anna is leaving us in about a week.
Yeah, have we talked about that at all?
I don't think we have.
There's a whole lot to say, but like Anna's guested with us on the podcast. We've really enjoyed her time here.
She's been here for a while. She's been shopping with us forever.
Yeah.
It's
always exciting because I remember that like Anna has told me on occasions that like her first comic basically was here. It was the Immortal Iron Fist.
Yeah. You find that exciting? I find that makes me feel super old.
I didn't read the Immortal Iron Fist, so you feel however you need to. No, it's very cool.
Yeah, but anyway, Anna will be leaving us to move out of state with her partner, and that's great.
Yeah, it's a good move.
It's good for her. It sucks for us because we really liked having Anna around.
Yep.
But hopefully she'll come and visit us from time to time.
And now we can gossip about her.
Now we can gossip about her on the podcast. We got in a few things. The stuff I ordered at Gamma last month is starting to sort of still trickle in a little bit. We're starting to get most of those orders, but... among them this week, we've got the Goliath coins.
Yeah, those
which
are cool.
Big, solid coins, metal coins that on the front have either a D&D character or a beastie.
Yeah.
And on the back, it has something. So, like, one of them is a Tarrasque, the big the kaiju of the D&D world.
Yep.
And on the back is a city that the Tarrasque has destroyed.
I'm just saying, throw them at your players who aren't paying attention at the table.
Yeah.
These are big coins.
Yep.
They've got real heft to them. There's, like, dragons on them and owlbears and other
There's
cool
Tarrasque.
Stuff.
There's a Tarrasque.
And a Tarrasque.
They also, you can use them for like inspiration tokens or various other things.
Yeah, they're
you
really
also,
cool.
You can spin them if you go to our TikTok.
Yes.
Shereen and I spun one and then watched it like tumble down. So
yep.
They're very cool. And once you get them, once you take a look at them on their stands and kind of feel the heft of them, they are very irresistible. Especially, I ordered more owlbears because owlbears are the unofficial mascot of the store.
That's right.
We also got Choose Your Own Adventures.
Mm-hmm.
For those who don't know, the Choose Your Own Adventure novels still in production.
Yep, this I think began maybe in the 70s. If not,
so.
It could have been the 80s, but I think it actually might have been around since the 70s. And what we've got are, we've carried the, there's some games, like sort of party games based on them, but these are the straight up books, right?
The books, yeah.
The original one that's like Trapped in the Himalayas and...
The Titanic.
The Titanic.
Yep, yep. And there's a Yeti one and...
There's a Yeti, there's a zombie, there's a ninja.
Harry Houdini yeah. one.
Oh, Harry Houdini, I forgot Harry Houdini.
Yeah. I think they were largely, like, I don't know if you're usually a teenager in it, but, like, yeah, these are cool books where you will get, like, two or three pages in, or three or four pages in, and you will get to make a choice, and it'll send you to some other page, and you can keep a little thumb in that page, because you might die on that other page.
And then
page.
You go back.
Many yeah. of them say 28 endings, and I'm just saying, that's 27 ways to die.
Yeah. That's right. Some of
isn't
them...
Isn't that a James Bond movie, 27 Ways to Die?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, many of those games were somewhat lethal, which made them very fun to read through.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember I used to read them, I did the D&D ones more than the regular ones, but I would, like, read them with a friend and, like, let him make the calls, but I'd read the book. Yeah. I'd, like, read the chapter or whatever. Yeah. And so it was fun.
Yeah. We also got some of the things from USAopoly. The guys do sort of licensed games, so we got Munchkin back, the Critical Role, the Disney Munchkin.
Mm-hmm.
We got, for the first time ever, we have Telestrations, which is a super fun party game. If you've never played it, it's going to be Telestrations After Dark.
We have a Toy Story deck building game.
We have a Toy Story deck building game. We have a Critical Role Rubik's Cube.
That Toy Story deck building game, I think, may be loosely based on, or maybe explicitly based on, the Harry Potter deck building game. Was it something at Hogwarts? Hogwarts
yeah.
Battle.
Yeah.
Which I always thought had a really cool format to it. And I think this would means it would be a good deck building game to learn for kids.
Yeah.
Like a good first one to try out. And, you know, before, instead of jumping into, like, Dominion or the DC deck building game or something like that, it should be a good intro one. And the Harry Potter one, if it is like that, and I don't know this for sure, that one scaled so that you actually went through seven different, all 7 different years that the kids did. And, like, the first year was, like, just the most basic rules, just to kind of get the idea of, like, you buying other cards with cards and building up your deck. And then each year they would add a few new kind of rules in, and by like year three it got like, you're like, oh, this is really cool. This is like as elaborate as you know, DC deck building or whatever.
Yeah, that's pretty
and
cool.
If they do something like that with the Toy Story one, that would be very cool too.
And by the seventh year you can actually do magic, right?
Yes, absolutely. And but yes. You are also hunted by, who's the bad guy?
Voldemort.
You said the name, Randy.
I know.
Then you must be him.
I fear nothing. It is my birthday week. I dare Voldemort to show up here and zap me.
Neat.
Rafe Fiennes will now haunt your dreams.
Yeah, it's right. just Rafe Fiennes.
It's just Rafe Fiennes without a nose. We also got the right up front, we got the Free League Games, which yep. are the guys who do these really beautiful RPGs and stuff. So we got the Alien RPG. There's a starter box and then a core set, an adventure, a GM kit. There's like, it's a bunch of stuff. Vaesen, which is sort of Nordic horror role-playing.
Yep. By the way, I never quite thought that there would be a starter box set for Alien.
I know.
We've got a lot of starter box sets for D&D, Pathfinder, even like cyberpunk games and Shadowrun and stuff like that. But Alien is a little bit more off the beaten path, and yet we have a starter box set for it.
Well, we have a starter box set for The One Ring, which is the other thing we've got, the new second edition of the Lord of the Rings RPG.
Yeah, and this is the one that's kind of like very much... intends to not just be D&D with like the serial numbers filed off and made to look like, you know, with a Lord of the Rings sprinkling.
Actually, I think given the origins, it's probably the serial numbers put back on.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It is very inspired by the books Lord of the Rings and elements of the movies, but like to build up that like the traveling elements, the elements of like kind of where your morale is and whether you're falling into that corruptive state or like the hop, one of the things the hobbits are good at is resisting that.
Yeah.
They're not the super swordplay bestest, but oh, by the way, the starter one I've heard for this is an all hobbit adventure. Like you play all hobbits from the Shire off on like a sort of first adventure, which sounds pretty cool.
So oops, all hobbits.
So yes. Does the ring come into play all the time in your games?
No.
Or okay, I was gonna say if you're playing a human, are you doomed to be?
I think they discovered that Middle Earth was not a name everybody recognized, but the One Ring was, and I think that's probably why.
I think it's just a branding thing more than anything else. The previous one focused on a certain area of the of terrain, the area that had like. What is it? Where not Shelob, but the spider forest. What's it called?
Oh,
the nasty forest.
Sure, I don't know.
It's the main thing in The Hobbit. It's the one thing that they have to traverse. What's that?
Mirwood.
Mirkwood. Yeah. Super famous. I just couldn't quite say it. And this kind of, I think, zeroes in on sort of some other geographical locations. But yeah, you can play, like, elves and dwarves and hobbits and humans, but also, like, the Bjornings, the guy who could turn into a bear.
Yeah.
And
that's cool. I would like to run around in Rohan.
They may even have, like, yeah, absolutely. I think, like, Riders of Rohan. They may not allow players to play, like, wizards, since there's literally only, like, four wizards in the broad
history of
Middle-earth. There's just not a lot of them. But yeah, other than that, they from what I've seen, do a really good job of capturing the vibe.
That's pretty cool.
There's also Morkborg, which is these are sort of metal.
Yeah, metalhead thing with super cool production design on it. Yeah, like, I was like, I am not a metalhead, but I was considering, like, that's almost something I could pick up just for the way it looks.
Yeah.
I've seen art and stuff from it, and I know metalhead Chris Nicholas,
yep.
who runs the small press convention Staple, and is, yeah, he is into that aesthetic, and I've seen him post pictures before this became mainstream,
yep.
and I was like, man, that looks cool.
We also got the newest expansion for Marvel Champions, Sinister Motives, which has Miles Morales and Spider-Gwen.
Yep, Champions being the Marvel card game.
Marvel card game.
Yep.
We've got Villainous Bigger and Badder, the new Disney Villainous expansion, which is also a standalone game that has... This is getting into some weird territory. The villains are Syndrome from Incredibles.
Mimsy, still pretty well known, though.
Mimsy from...
Black Cauldron.
Deep Cut.
And Lotso?
It was Lotso from Toy Story 3.
Okay. Deep Cuts.
You can play those villains. It was also Miniatures Week. We got the Death Saves minis from Joe Manganiello's... His campaign. We got the Forgotten Realms minis based on the Magic Forgotten Realms set, which actually turns out to be... So there's like a... There's a Lolth, like the Lolth Spider Queen. There's an Adventurer set that's got like several monsters that are several adventurers and characters that are in the Forgotten Realms card set.
Okay.
So, like, there's a bard, there's a Yuan-Ti rogue.
Oh, the Magic the Gathering Forgotten Realms card set? Yeah.
And then there is the Companions, which has Drizzt and Gwynevar and Brunnar Battlehammer and all those guys.
All the classics.
That one is definitely going to be one of the big ones.
Yeah. We also got cards for the, or miniatures for the Pathfinder Mwangi Expanse. That was one of the recent books they did. Like their jungle territory.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, starting tomorrow, we will have the D&D Frameworks minis. Which are the new line from WizKids that is basically you get one mini, it's on sprues, which means you have to cut it and glue it and all that kind
of
stuff.
It's a deeper cut on the craft side of it, but you have an extremely customizable figure. Yeah,
they all come with like multiple different heads and arms and weapons.
Or if you want to get really fancy, you just magnetize everything and you can swap out arms and hands.
If you want to get crazy. That is, I think, beyond what most people would be doing, but it's a cool idea. Nick, would you do that for me?
I could.
I need you to make
I have the tiny magnets for it.
Nick, I need you to magnetize every one of them.
No, I can't do that. Because that would mean opening all of them. That's just sad.
That's true. They're very cool. It's a lot of player characters. And then there's like a handful of monsters, including a big-ass Baylor.
There's also Beholders. There's Mind Flayers.
There's
big Baylor.
There's a Hell Giant. There's a Stone Giant.
Yep.
There's a...
Pack of kobolds.
They have two sets. There's a kobold set and an orc set. And the kobold set has, like, one of the kobolds has, like, a little boot on his head.
Yeah, they're like little doofus kobolds.
Yeah.
Those are the ones we want to fight in the store.
Absolutely. This did come up in conversation earlier. I don't know if people know about the most important hypothetical question we ever posed.
You usually have this challenge that you laid out to us.
I think in brief, I had to double check because what did we determine? It was a stone golem or an iron golem?
It was a stone golem.
Right.
Stone golem.
Yeah, we need to remake this as a TikTok challenge now that we're on TikTok. But essentially, it was a challenge of not defeating these monsters, but if you had to cross the store, our Rogues Gallery store, from the front door to the back door emergency exit.
Yep.
And you would be opposed by either four kobolds,
yep.
not too tough, but nasty in packs. They actually have nasty little tactics. Or one big old brute-ish stone golem.
Stone golem, yeah.
I think it was stone golem. I have to double-check my notes.
I think you're right.
When we looked, I was like, they do move at normal speed. They are not lumbering slow Frankensteins, but they're also not super fast.
And an aura.
And it is just a singular one. But, like, if you get, like, within 10 feet, it can slow you, though.
Yeah.
Yes, it was,
and then you're in big trouble.
This was hotly debated, whether or not, whether the foolish choice was the four kobolds or the stone golem.
Yep. But, like, among my, when I threw it out to Facebook, I believe most people said they'd prefer to face the golem. They figured they could take, get past the one big guy and not, that the four little guys would, like, you know, chew them up.
You say most, but I believe there was a core of us kobold
it was, like, deniers. 2 to, like, 12.
I will take on the slightly larger gremlins.
What we need is we need to get a very tall man to dress up as a stone golem.
Yep.
And we need to get people to bring in four children in kobold costumes and run this thing for real.
Yeah. I'm down with it. Now, I did figure that part of the thing, the danger of the big guy, would it be he would just be like smashing everything apart, knocking over every case, making it hard to maneuver. So if we do this, it's going to get
messy.
It's
going to destroy the store.
Yes.
Yeah.
We should do it for a TikTok, though, to show how the run would go. what was I going to say? I don't know. That's all.
Okay, on to news then. There's not a lot, but what is here is interesting. Let's start with the weirdest. There's a Spirit Halloween Store movie in the works.
Yes.
With Christopher Lloyd and Rachel Lee Cook.
Yes.
What is going on in Christopher Lloyd's career?
You know, he's about to be in what, Star Wars?
Yeah, he's about to be in The Mandalorian.
Yeah, right.
Anybody know who he's gonna play?
They made some kind of time travel. Oh, he was in an ad for the Adam Project because he was like the time travel expert.
Okay.
Interesting.
So,
somebody said that he should be what, the Mando DeLorean or whatever. But anyway, yes, the ridiculous sounding Spirit Halloween movie it will revolve around it's going to be like an all ages sort of family movie, but like spooky. So probably like the Goosebumps movies, I would imagine. And I believe some kids will get trapped inside a Spirit Halloween store with mysterious goings on, and sort of I'm guessing sort of that Night of the at the Museum sort
this
of vibe.
This is essentially a really good branding exercise, right? This
yes. Like, well, you know. There's been so many as a meme that anytime basically anybody gets kicked out of somewhere or whatever, or like a business closes up, there's like a meme that will show like a Spirit Halloween store appearing.
So I see this story.
I feel like that's the movie. It should be like the sentient Spirit Halloween store that keeps opening in business.
I assumed it was just going to be this can open up anywhere and they choose the wrong location and it's like haunted or
it's like the people working there.
I'm not going to say I won't go see it, because I probably will. But I do also feel like I thought the Battleship movie, we'd already reached like peak, why are we making this movie? But it's one of those.
Liam Neeson starred in that. It's not a bad movie.
Look, Liam Neeson's been in as many movies as Nicolas Cage, and I don't think it's a good thing for either of them.
Who do you think has a better track record, though, Nicolas Cage or Liam Neeson?
Nicolas Cage, because he's better than Liam Neeson.
I mean, he's a better actor, yes. I don't know if that was always the case.
Liam Neeson, when he's at his peak,
he's actually won an
Oscar. Like an apples and oranges.
I guess they both
thing.
Won
like,
an Oscar,
like,
haven't they?
He's got like he's always going to have Oscar Schindler, y'all.
Yeah. Did he do that just for the Oscar? He's like, I'm going to play like.
Did he win that as an Oscar, or did he win Rob Roy?
I don't know.
I think it might have been Rob Roy.
I think it was Rob Roy.
It was actually that Snowplow movie. He won an Oscar for that.
I watched that. Was the one where he bare knuckle fights wolves?
Really. That's The Gray.
That was The Gray. I watched that as well.
I kind of liked that one.
Yeah, it was okay. The ice trucker one was just okay.
I feel like there's actually one legit great scene in The Gray, and it's when that dude is bleeding out and he has to talk him through dying. That's a good scene.
There was an after credit sequence in The Gray.
Was there?
Do they show up and ask him to join the
Because
gray
otherwise, is it one of those that sort of, I seem to remember I saw this, they kind of, because this movie ends on a kind of a what happens next note. Does the after credit sequence kind of answer it? That's what I was thinking.
This happens next.
I mean, that's kind of cheap. If you're going to like, Randy, you know how Angel, the series, ended?
Yes, yeah.
And it ended on this precipice.
You don't, after the credits, have Angel, like, flying around on the dragon?
Yeah, you don't do that.
You mean, like, what they did with the comic series?
Yeah.
What about Dave, the famous ending of The Thing, which is like, well, I guess we'll find out. Then post-credits, it's like, I'm The Thing.
Ah, crap.
Yeah, maybe they should never put post-credit sequence on everything.
But by the way, that's our question to the viewership. I think the listenership right this week is, who is the better actor, Liam Neeson or Nicolas Cage?
Yep.
assuming both their long track records, but also their peaks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, take their peaks into account.
If you
this
have
is a Leaving Las Vegas, Nick Cage versus Oscar Schindler, Liam Neeson.
I think their character should fight.
Weird.
Nicholas, National Treasure, Nicholas Cage. No, what's Nicholas Cage's badass role? What is it?
Poe versus Caster Taken guy.
Taken, yeah. Guy, yeah.
Taken Liam Neeson.
Caster Troy.
And here's the thing. We know the name of Nicholas Cage's. We don't know the Taken guy's name. I'm just saying, as far as evidence goes. Now, man,
is it Frank?
I don't think you knew the name of Cameron Poe until Nick said
it. I do know the name Cameron Poe.
I think it's Frank something, right?
Is it?
I've seen Taken enough times.
Oh, I should have taken
his full name is Francisco Taken. I think.
My name is Francisco
Don't
Taken.
Look it up. Don't look it up. Just assume I'm right.
I will. All right. Two bits of movie news, both one of them relating to the Nicolas Cage. Let's start with that. Justin Bartha, a name you may not know, is reprising his role in National Treasure in the Disney Plus series.
Oh, yeah. He is...
he's what's hacker his guy.
Character's name?
Francisco Treasure.
Not everyone is named Francisco, Randy.
These two guys are. Prove me wrong.
I'm going to look it up, but he's a good character. He's the man...
Riley,
yeah. What do you call those? Like the man at the computer, the man behind the scenes?
Man in the chair.
Man in the chair, yeah. He's the man in the chair for Nicolas Cage in the National Treasure movies.
And he's also the snarky guy.
He's a little nerdy. Yep. He's a little nerdy, can't ever kind of win, loser dude, and he's a very fun character.
I'm glad he's going to be in the show. That's kind of cool.
I felt like it kind of needed some lineage that connected it more with the show, other than maybe like a little guest appearance by Nicolas Cage.
Right.
Or an ailing, decrepit John Voight.
Did you hear that Nicolas Cage thinks they're not going to ask him because he pissed off Disney? I think he said something in an interview. Like,
I mean, he says a lot of things, but I don't think anybody takes any of anybody seriously.
No.
He could have been like, you know, that mouse is probably funding terrorism. but then he would have just said something like, you know, I drink my own urine for nourishment. And he would just take it all at the exact same level.
I guess we should take this into account in the Cage versus Neeson thing. Who gives weirder and worse interviews? Because Neeson said some real...
Neeson has had some really
bad stuff.
Oh, that's
gotta
right.
That's got to be taken into account.
That's right. Oops.
The other news, Dave, I think you've signed off of this franchise, but Brie Larson is joining Fast and Furious 10, according to...
That actually made me more interested.
Vin Diesel. Here's the thing. I think Vin Diesel just says things. I'm not sure I believe it until it actually happens.
Yeah.
He just... I mean, he's also, like, trying to get The Rock back on board. I think Vin Diesel...
That ship sailed.
But, like, he straight up said, like... like something like, I can't tell you how badass she's going to be as part of the team. It sounded like more than just a, I think she might join. It sounded pretty
She's
going to
be the young clone of Cypher. And that's not any more ridiculous than anything else in Fast and Furious.
Not particularly, no. She could, in fact, who's the big bad lady?
Cypher.
Oh, that's who you were talking about. I don't remember her name.
Charlize Theron.
Could she be her daughter?
She could be.
Yeah.
She's a little old for her daughter, I think.
No. I don't think so.
I don't know.
Charlize Theron is 40s?
I don't know.
And how old is Brie Larson?
30s?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Okay, yeah, that might be a little bit of a stretch.
I don't know how old anybody
but,
is.
But it's the kind of story that they would do.
Yes.
The daughter of our most evil enemy is turns out to be trying to rebel against her. And maybe she could redeem her mom and get her onto the team.
Maybe one big family.
Sure, she tried to kill their babies one time.
Sure, she killed the baby's mother in front of Vin Diesel.
Yeah, but maybe that didn't happen.
I'm going to reverse that, too.
They can reverse it.
Brie Larson's 32, and Charlize Theron is 46.
If Han could come back...
So if Charlize Theron had her when she was 14, she could be her mom.
Also, they could age her to make her a hag. Listen, Charlize Theron can be chameleon-like.
You know, they should
play a little older.
Just get crazy. Just get Brie Larson and John...
out of space.
Yes.
I'd rather have Tom Hardy.
And it's going to become supercharged with her cosmic energy, so it's like a cosmic Fiat.
Listen, what's Vin Diesel's character's name? Here's your new ally, Aquaman. We need you and your crew to get these custom-made submarines and get down there.
Fast and Furious 10, Atlantis. Atlantis racing.
Atlantis bound.
Atlantis bound, yes.
All right, that's all the news we've got. All
right.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics for the week of April 13th.
Yep.
I think the big news this week is that there's another Reckless graphic novel.
Yes.
For those who don't know, this is Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips' crime series, but it's like a troubleshooter.
He's a big personality detective.
But he's not actually a detective. He doesn't have any skills in detecting.
No, he does. He's a private investigator. He's an ex-FBI agent.
Oh, is he? Okay.
He was an undercover guy that had...
an informant.
Yeah, just no. The quick backstory that you get in the first issue is that he was an FBI guy who infiltrated an extreme left-wing organization in, like, the 60s or 70s that was kind of like the Weather Underground.
And then there was a bomb that left him with brain injury.
And killed some of his friends, and he basically turned his back on the FBI at that point.
Yep.
But he also had, like, caused, like, a bit of brain damage where he, like can't form emotional attachments
or something.
His emotional
issues, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, which is interesting, and he's, like, a fascinatingly deep character, but he also kind of has some fun stuff about him. Like, his sort of, like, base of operations is, like, a cheap old discount theater he bought, or, like, a revival theater.
Yep. And he has sort of this punky girl who's his assistant.
Yep.
And they, sort of a...
Each graphic novel is a new case, in essence.
And they all move forward a little bit. I think this one is set in the 80s, and this is actually... It focuses very heavily on said punky girl assistant.
Okay, cool.
That's cool. With her purple hair.
Yeah, and there's, like, a lot of Brubaker stuff. It's both, like, kind of, like, engaging and, like, kind of fast-moving. Like these kind of move along.
Yeah.
But also has some dark turns. Like, I always feel like things are never quite what I expect them to be. I never go in and I'm like, oh, I see what he's doing.
Yeah.
I never quite know what he's doing. And usually there's some sort of emotional edge to it that's, like, really involving. I'm like, oh... Wow, there are some serious stakes to this story that I did not expect there to be.
And Sean Phillips usually draws the hell out of them.
Yeah, this is the fourth one in the series. It's really, really good.
Walk in on any of them, I would suggest probably starting with the first one.
I would start with the beginning, but they deliberately make it so you can just read any one of them. It's kind of like a book series. He's definitely basing it off as sort of like the 70s or 80s.
These are like
novels.
His little pulp noir kind of.
Yeah.
Or if
you
want
some inspiration from who's the TV guy? Rockford Files.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, kind of a slightly colorful detective who's not like a tough noir guy quite. Although this guy can throw some punches when he needs to.
Yeah. We also have Sandman Book 1 with Sandman coming to Netflix soon. This is the new collection of Sandman. I think it's 1 through 20.
A format long and the sort of long needed.
Sandman essentially is the first three trades.
Yep. Sandman traditionally, I think, has what, 10 volumes made up the whole thing?
This is going to be 4.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of about time that they did that.
Yep.
Would you say that Walking Dead's format in those, like, really kind of brought into popularity the big format?
No, this isn't as big as the Invincible or the Walking Dead.
No, but we have seen, like, sort of like a middle ground appearing lately, which it's also something they've been doing with manga. They'll do essentially what would be 3-in-1 volumes, and that's much more manageable. It's like, if you lie back in bed and read this, it's not going to crush your chest like those Walking Dead volumes.
Yep.
But anyway, man, this is some good Sandman stuff. If you've never read it...
This is the introduction. It's where he like, has to go recover his helmet and his gear.
Yep. It's got the famous first appearance of Death issue.
Mm-hmm. It also has a lot of the short story stuff, which is some of the best stuff.
Yeah.
It has a story of the Dream Country that tied into some of the characters that were in the DC, like the Fury and some of the DC characters. It's also got the one the World Fantasy Award.
Yep. That was for people who don't remember the 1990s, there was a big stir. The World Fantasy Award is a pretty prestigious award. It's the kind of thing that probably people like George R. R. Martin and other big fantasy name authors tend to win. And a comic won it. And people flipped their shit.
Yep.
And they're like, yeah, comics can't win this anymore. It's kind of rare that there's that kind of, that comics make that kind of news. But Neil Gaiman, people were not prepared for like what a force to be reckoned with he would be in comics.
One last trade this week. There is House of Slaughter Volume 1. This is the prequel / side story to Something is Killing the Children.
Yeah.
It's about Aaron Slaughter, who was Erica's handler and rival. And this is his story as a teenager training with the House of Slaughter, which is the like monster hunting organization. It's just as good as Somebody's Killing the Children, I would say.
I feel like all our horror fans need to basically look into James Tynion's comics.
Yeah, for sure.
So House of Slaughter, Something is Killing the Children, and Nice House on the Lake, if we haven't reminded you, all written by the same guy, all kind of breakout hits. And, a friend of mine just picked up the trade paperback of
Nice House on the Lake,
and she's already obsessing over it. So yeah.
Crossing over from the one that you were just talking about this week, there is Sandman Universe Nightmare Country number one, written by James Tynion.
Yep. Yes. This takes a character that Sandman readers will know, the rather terrifying sort of embodiment of nightmares, the Corinthian.
Yep, yep.
Who looks like kind of like a well-dressed, kind of almost like Patrick Bateman-esque
Yeah,
guy,
yeah, yeah.
Who's always wearing sunglasses, because behind those sunglasses are not eyes, but biting mouths for eyes. And he's an extremely creepy figure who figures into one of the early Sandman stories, but is now the subject of his own miniseries.
Yeah, one of the covers has one of those mouths, has a tongue that's like licking his lips.
Yeah.
It's weird. Yeah.
Very disturbing.
Yep. And some good writing from Tynion in there. I think he's going to probably be a pretty good fit for the Sandman universe stuff.
DC also has Flashpoint Beyond number zero this week. This is Geoff Johns returning to the Flashpoint universe.
It's kind of their big, what we think is going to be their sort of big crossover of the year.
It's also sort of a return to the Doomsday Clock universe. There's some nods in that direction.
Yeah.
It does seem like it is taking place in the Flashpoint universe, which is supposed to have been erased, and the Thomas Wayne Batman is trying to figure out why that happened.
Just real quick, for people who may not remember, Flashpoint was like, what, 5, 10 years ago? I don't know.
Could have been.
Yeah.
But it was an alternate universe created when Barry Allen was trying to, save his mom?
Yeah.
Or something? Yep. And that actually created this, sprung up out of that?
That's correct.
And it was, among some of the changes in this world, you had, Atlantis and the Amazons at war with each other.
Yep.
Very notably, when Bruce Wayne's parents would have been killed in the alley, he in fact was killed, leading his father to go on to become a very vengeful Batman, and his mother to lose it and become the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all these kind of tweaks. It was a rather dark DC universe, but with some interesting spins on that.
Had a weird Superman who was an alien experiment.
Yeah. But in the end, they Barry seemed to set things right and undo it. So one of the mysteries in it is how is it still in existence? That's being investigated by the Thomas Wayne Batman in this.
Also, the regular Batman.
Is it?
The very beginning, the one who's talking to those two characters is actually Bruce.
That is Batman. Batman
is Bruce.
Is it?
Uh-huh. And there's also there's a character called the Clockwork Killer. So there's a murder mystery that's at the heart of it,
mm-hmm.
and that very name may suggest to you what else it's also kind of a sequel to. Not just Flashpoint, but another DC project. Should we say what that project is?
I already did.
Oh, did you? I don't pay attention to what you say.
Doomsday Clock.
Yeah, Doomsday Clock,
this
a.k.a.
is the last thing Johns wrote.
The Watchmen DC crossover.
For me, what was so interesting about this book, and I'm curious, all big DC, blockbusters, I kind of get interested a little bit. And Johns is good at just incidental writing.
Yeah, he likes to play, and he likes to play with he's got usually kind of neat ideas as to how all the wide tapestry of characters of the universe would be involved.
He likes to build these continuity puzzle boxes.
But his pairing here with artist Eduardo Rizzo, who usually works with Azzarello, is an interesting pairing. I didn't think on a surface level it was going to work as well as it does.
People may remember that Well, that's right. Azzarello did work on the previous Flashpoint. It's just that it wasn't the one that Johns wrote.
No, Azzarello and Rizzo worked on the
Batman,
the
one.
Thomas Wayne one.
Yeah,
and then
Johns wrote the main series, but now he's actually straight up working with that artist.
Yeah, and it's good artwork, and I am curious to see where this one goes.
It draws a pretty dope Batman.
He does.
Then we've got Image 30th Anniversary Anthology. This is a 12-issue anthology. It's going to run the rest of the year. There are 10 stories in here. Some are three-parters, four-parters. One's a one-part, one-shot. Some are going to run all 12. The creators include, there's a Geoff Johns horror story in here. Wes Craig, Scotty Young, Mirka Andolfo. So there's a Shift, which is a four-part Radiant Black spinoff. So if you're looking for the next Radiant Black character, there's another one introduced here by Kyle Higgins. Basically it's their new anthology of a bunch of different concepts and stuff.
Yeah, it's sort of a lot of Image's best and brightest. Do you say how many of them are based on existing properties and how much are
only
original?
Only one. Okay. Radiant Black is touched on here, but everything else is brand new.
Okay.
Next up, we've got Dark Horse's Breakout, which, Dave, I think you pinned down. This is basically a metaphor on school shootings. But basically, there's a...
But the thing that is a somewhat more interesting notion than just... It's specifically addressing the fact that how we've become to ignore them.
Yeah.
It's become commonplace, but it's a much sort of bigger sci-fi notion.
I mean, it's got this sort of Independence Day vibe. Basically, giant cubes appear in the sky.
Like alien ships cubes.
And they started kidnapping children between 11 and 20 years old, 36 kids at a time. And this happened, like, I don't know, 20 years ago or whatever.
As far as they know, there's nothing that can be done about them.
Yeah, the military attacked them. They fired nukes at it. Like, they weren't able to do anything. And now they've just kind of, they're just like, they move on. And this focuses on a kid.
Well, not to say we move on, but the aliens keep kidnapping children.
Yeah, the aliens, yeah.
We just accept it.
It's kind of like school shootings. There's like, it just happens.
Yeah. But there's some kids who are not big on this idea.
Nope. There's a guy who's, his brother gets abducted, and he decides he's going to build a heist crew and get into one of these things.
Yeah, one of the neat things I thought when I was reading it was early on, they say that some of the kids manage to, like, when they're taken, they sometimes have their phones with them.
Yeah.
And they manage to get, like, a video out briefly before it gets, like, taken from them.
Yep.
So there have been brief glimpses of the insides. They know that they are, like, not immediately killed. But, like, I think there's not much they know beyond that, right?
Yeah.
It's a pretty cool premise.
Yeah, and it's... There's definitely some, like, whether or not it's alien, they talk about maybe it might be humans from the future or something like that.
Oh, interesting.
So there's some implications that it's not aliens, that it might be something more than that. But, yeah, the building of the crew that they do at the end, where they're, like, building up their people that they're going to use to get into this cube is really interesting. I really like this. It reminds me of sort of Last Flight Out and some of the other sci-fi ones that Dark Horse has been doing lately.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Last Flight Out was good.
There's also a town called Terror, which is
Steve Niles returning to horror, yeah. the genre that kind of he sort of helped define in comics about 20 years ago with 30 Days of Night, his Vampires of the what was it, Alaska?
Yeah,
is that where it was
in Alaska? Yep.
Yeah, and he's dabbled in almost every horror genre since then. I didn't have a chance to read this, but I know it sort of begins with like a sort of a. Violent kidnapping, I think, of a woman's husband, and there's something about maybe the town that is going to be a bigger story, like some broader horror thing where it's like, oh, this kidnapping isn't just a kidnapping, or there's something more to it.
Nick, I see you have in your hands the X-Men House of... Is it House of XCII?
Yeah.
What is that?
Is that 92?
I think it's 92.
I think it is, because there's a 2
right.
on the end.
Yep.
Because it is the what they now call, I think, X-Men 92 to refer to the animated series... Right. X-Men cartoon of the 90s.
I didn't get a chance to read it, so I was just flipping through it, and it looks like it incorporates some of like the Hickman's Krakoa stuff
into the animated series.
Into the animated series continuity.
Yes. And I don't believe that's like, I don't believe this is meant to be part of like an ongoing thing.
No.
I think they're just like, what if the animated series caught up to the Hickman stuff?
Yeah.
Kind of. Or like, it was introduced, you know, in that same era.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
this is the Wolverine of the cartoons that's like, I'm gonna cut you to pieces, bub.
Yeah.
And the Storm who's like, Lords of Earth and Air, like this sort of heightened version of it.
Yep.
Yet somehow finding their way into the more nuanced Hickman vibe.
Yes, apparently there's like these little very Hickman-esque like infographics.
Oh my god, that super 90s infographics with like the floating triangles and like the delightful.
But they
those
have
are the infographics.
They have these are the infographics and they
it looks
have
like a
list.
Trapper Keeper.
It does look like a Trapper Keeper. And it does look like there is a new The Five, the people who could have sort of conquered death for Krakoa. And I see that Gold Balls is eliminated.
Yay!
Thank God. No.
This Gold Ball's gone the way of Morph.
90s retro incarnation of Gold Balls is gone. Yay!
But it looks like they're fighting Sentinels and Orcus and Master Mold and
well, like
it's kind
I feel
of
like
just fun.
Well, yeah, this is a fun time for fans of the 90s X-Men thing. A Disney Plus is going to do a new sort of follow-up
right.
show. Which will continue it, but like have sort of also a little bit of its own visual style, but it will be a literal continuation of the 90s show.
What
I think where it left off.
If they incorporate Krakoa?
I mean, they might, but the fact that they're doing that as kind of a novelty miniseries in the comics form leads me to believe they're not.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's like, basically, if they want to continue doing what the cartoon did, which was the cartoon adapted stuff going back to old school X-Men stories.
Some really good adaptations, actually.
Up to things that were happening in the 90s, like Genosha and stuff like that. And I think what they can do is look at, like, all the stuff that's happened between then, basically everything in the 2000s, And, you know, like, they could adapt, you know, for the 90s cartoon, or for the update, Morrison's X-Men.
Age of Apocalypse.
Age of Apocalypse. What's the one with the... One of the big crossovers of the mid-2000s, the one where...
Messiah Complex?
Messiah Complex, yep, that was
Rise
it.
Rise and Fall of Shire.
Who's the girl in Messiah Complex?
Hope
yeah. Like, any of that stuff could end up getting adapted, and ultimately, potentially, up to the Hickman era.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine it, because that X-Men of the 90s is a very certain stripe of X-Men.
It's true.
It's kind of big. But
Worf!
Quiet Council. That's what it'll be.
Yeah,
for the
I don't
Hickman
think the
era.
Quiet Councils will be very quiet.
But like
in
Kitty's
the
90s. Marauders and stuff like that, I could almost picture that in their yeah. sort of larger than life style. They would just have them like as more like prepare to be boarded by Kitty and the Marauders.
As long as Cyclops says energy blast, huh? Here's one from a pro.
Actually, he's going to say vote of no confidence, here's one from a pro. It's going to be all meetings and
that's
stuff
sad.
Just like it is in Hickman's era.
They also Marvel put out Electro number 100 this week. I'm not sure how the math works, but there is a cover gallery in here, so maybe that's how they get it.
Is that weirdly like taking into account every appearance of the of Electro?
I think it might be. So
she's had a lot of miniseries and like
yeah.
and stuff over the years. I think that's
the
makes
main
sense.
Story is written by Ann Nesenti, who has written a lot of and I believe it has her facing off with Typhoid Mary. And then there's a short backup story with Declan Shalvey writing, with really nice art by Stefano Raphael. And then a little mini Marvels by Chris Guirusso, which is cute. There's also, like I said, there's a cover gallery in here of like all the previous 100 Electras. I'm looking and I see Electra Assassin in here.
Yeah.
The Bizarre. Electra series from the 90s.
Does it in fact have, as I wondered, Randy, did Greg Rucka do a miniseries that was a... Or was that a Wolverine one that Yoshitaka Amano painted?
So I don't see.
Do you remember
one,
this, Nick?
As I look in here,
the Final
one.
Fantasy guy, there was like a prose thing that was either by Rucka or somebody, and Rucka? It was either Elektra or Wolverine.
I feel it's like not, Rucka wrote the Ultimate, like Daredevil.
So it's not in here. Oh, Ultimate Elektra and Daredevil is not in here either, but they do have the Scott Morse weird painty jazz one that they did.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like all the covers of this. What's weird is I don't think any of this stuff's in print. they're printing this Electro 100, but they don't have most of the trades in print.
I do wonder if that might change since she has, you know, in the months to come since she's taken over the main series.
Yeah, maybe so. There is another one-shot from Aftershock, a horror one-shot called Midnight Rose that is about a sort of almost a Swamp Thing type woman. It's written by Jim Starlin, who, among other things, created Adam Warlock, Thanos.
Yep.
Things
they
like
wrote
that.
The death of the original Robin. Not original Robin, but that is to say Jason Todd.
Yep.
Paving the way for Red Hood and all that stuff.
Yep. There's a G.I. Joe 40th anniversary special, which is the silent issue, the famous silent issue, redone page by page by 22 different artists.
Yeah, but like using the original layouts and stuff like that. And then it includes a
and
reprint
then it includes
of the original.
A reprint of the silent issue, which again, if you've never read the silent issue of G.I. Joe, this is worth getting. It's great.
Yeah, it's super cool. Snake Eyes infiltrates Castle Destro to rescue Scarlet. There's a face-off with Storm Shadow, and it, like in a purely visual style, revealed a plot point that would become absolutely core to the book from then onward.
Yep.
I don't want to spoil it even 40 freaking years later.
Yeah, there's also a few different covers in there. But yeah, it's a cool little feature. Also, if you are a D&D fan and you know of Minsk and Boo... they put out the D&D Minsk and Boo one-shot, which is a reprint of four different series that they've had.
And people who've been reading the D&D comics for the last several years know that Minsk and Boo have been kind of at the heart of a lot of the D&D comics. They just, they're super fun that people play, other characters play off well off of them. So they've been all over the place.
I wasn't sure how this would go, but basically, if you don't know, the Forgotten Realms moved forward about 100 years. So Minsk was a statue. He was like the famous ranger of Baldur's Gate.
Yep.
And in this first opening story, a chaos magician is being chased down, and she casts a spell and accidentally brings Mintz to life in the 100-year future.
Yep.
And then he begins fighting alongside her, and then they had multiple adventures together. So this is...
It's essentially his modern origin.
So it's got the first issue of Legends of Baldur's Gate, which is where he returned. It's got part two of Ravenloft, because that was the one that was focused heavily on him. It's got part one of an Evil at Baldur's Gate story, and then part five, which is Hamster's Quest, which forges on Boo.
Oh, that was a great little story.
I thought all of this was going to be maybe a little disjointed, but flipping through it, I'm like, these all work as standalone stories.
Well, that's probably credit to Jim Zub, who writes
all of these, yeah.
Yeah, because I think, although he wrote these are snippets of miniseries he wrote, I think he's a guy who was also talented enough to make sure each issue stood on its own merits.
If you don't want to burn, though, at $30 or $40, however it is much, to get the hardcover or the trade paperback of all the Zub stuff, which, by the way, totally worth it. It's great stuff.
Yeah.
This is a good sampler of Minsk and Boo.
Did we say who Minsk and Boo are? Just that he's like a big hulking barbarian and essentially a hamster companion.
I feel like if people don't know who Minsk and Boo are, they're going to care about anything else we say.
No, that's a cool hook.
Okay.
That's a fun D&D character.
Yeah. He's a ranger.
Yeah, he's a ranger, but he looks like a barbarian.
He looks like a barbarian. He talks like the Tick with a Russian accent.
Yeah, and he's got like kind of like face paint, almost like a Celtic or, you know, a Scottish warrior.
Yeah, he comes from one of the Forgotten Realms. There's witches and these guys, I think.
Anyway, yes, a super fun, memorable D&D character, and this is like a little highlight reel.
Just also this week, Superman Son of Kal-El number 10, which is a fantastic issue.
Arguably, this would have been my first one to discuss because it was my favorite book of the week. Yeah, but it is great. Just issue 10.
Yeah. It's my favorite book of the week, too. It's super good.
It's so good.
Basically, he is Superman, you know, Clark Kent's son, Jonathan, is starting to square off against Lex Luthor in a really interesting way, and it's a little bit of a media battle. But, like, and, like, Luthor's freaking smart.
Yeah.
But Lois Lane is on Jonathan's side, and she's also smart. And the way things play out is super interesting. Like, it both feels, like, very reflective of the real world and yet big superhero-y in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Jonathan gets to be cool. A good reflection of his dad, I think, in all the best ways.
Batman has a role.
Batman has a role, yeah. I mean, like, whenever... I told Randy earlier, I think I actually, you know, like, I'm not trying to, like, pit the kids against each other, but I think I like this a little over Tom Taylor's Nightwing.
Yes, and that's wrong, but I respect your opinion.
I have a reason for it.
Yes.
And it's not just some random choosy-choose. It's because I feel like the stakes are a little higher in this one. I feel like I like Nightwing, but I feel like it feels a little safe to me sometimes. And I feel like Jonathan's, like, his... Because maybe the scope of Superman is a bit bigger.
I think that's why it's kind of, like, larger than life. It's,
yeah.
Yeah. No, I totally see where you're coming from on that.
Yeah, and I'm also right.
I'm going to be the one in the middle and say I like them both equally.
Not me. You have to like one or the other.
Nope.
No.
Choose a side, Nick.
Nick is the... If he was a Marvel character, he'd be the in-betweener.
Nick, as Mr. Miyagi taught us, if you walk down the road, you walk on the left side, you're okay. Walk on the right side, you're okay. Walk down the middle, get squashed.
No. Jedi, Sith... I'm a gray Jedi.
Oh, I see. Nick busting out the expanded universe.
And there's a second issue of What If Miles Morales. This one is What If He Became Wolverine.
It's an interesting concept.
That is a weird stretch.
It's weird. But like the first one, it's interesting. So maybe give that a look. And that's all the comics for the week. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about a podcast and I think a TV show. All right, Nick, you had said you want to talk about The Night House.
Yeah, it's a movie that just hit HBO Max.
I was thinking it's a podcast, it's a movie.
It is. It stars Rebecca Hall, who you'll know from...
I recognize the name.
She was in The Town, she was in that kind of horror movie, The Gift. I don't know if you remember that one.
Was it Sam Raimi or something?
Wasn't that Sam Raimi? The Gift?
No, The Gift was... crap, who was it? Directed by Joel Edgerton.
You're hearing a beep beep. It's because there's a truck pulling up, I guess, outside.
No, it's because whenever Nick starts talking about horror movies, I start beeping.
She did show up in Iron Man 3. She played the
That's
the
who it was. Doctor. That's where I knew her from. Yeah. Okay.
But she was also in The Prestige and Godzilla vs. Kong. She's been in a lot. Let me put it that way.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
This is a movie about... I want to talk sort of vaguely because I honestly think Dave will enjoy it. But it's kind of this atmospheric horror film about a woman who loses their husband.
Okay.
And sort of...
Can I ask, do you mean loses, like, he dies,
he dies.
Disappears?
It's not, it's basically said in the first, like, minute of the movie.
They go into a corn maze.
So, it opens with her coming back home after a funeral, and her husband has taken their life. And then some spooky stuff starts to happen in this house that is basically on the lake.
Okay.
Is it a nice house on the lake?
It is a very nice house on the lake. It's also a very creepy house on the lake.
You know, there is a long tradition of somewhat privileged people in horror movies, because I think part of it is, like, the interiors of their houses are make for, like, good filming space.
Yep.
They're creepy and cavernous and have dark rooms and hallways and things.
But the way this movie is shot, and it's directed by David Bruckner, I'm trying to think of what else he's done. But it's just the way it's shot and sort of its execution of shadows and light, and also just sort of this kind of character-centric focus about one woman kind of grappling with the loss of her husband while also dealing with the unexpected is this kind of neat...
In a roundabout way, like, I'm sure it plays out differently, but that early Mike Flanagan movie, In Absentia.
Yeah, there's definite similarities.
That's about a sort of a missing husband and the inability to find closure.
Yeah. Randy, this is directed by the guy who did The Ritual.
Oh, and did, like, The Ritual.
Yeah, he also did Southbound, which is kind of like this movie about four different stories intersecting on, like, a highway. But this is also just a really kind of affecting movie.
Say that, like, in that Mike Flanagan way? Like, the characters kind of hook you in? It's got an emotional component?
Yeah, right? It kind of kept me thinking about it for a while after I watched it. And I think that's always a good hallmark of a good movie.
Tell me, what is the scare level? Are we talking eerie or are we talking scary?
There are outright some scares, so I don't know if I would call it, like... I put it a little above, like, Sixth Sense scary.
Okay.
So, kind of atmospheric.
Sixth Sense is actually very scary. People jumped out of their fucking skins when they went into that little tent with that little barfing girl. Oh my God.
There are moments of that in this, and
segue.
There are not moments of barfing girl in this movie, but, you know.
I have certain criteria in my horror movies.
Is there a barfing girl?
But a certain set of special abilities.
But I was really... I wanted to see this movie in theaters, but it came out during the pandemic, and then I kind of forgot about it when it hit video on demand.
Hmm.
And it just randomly popped up on HBO Max this weekend, and I was very excited. And
say the name one more time?
The Night House.
The Night House. Okay. It sounds like one I might want to check out. That's the kind of eerie vibe that's at least up my alley. I'll see if you're lying. I'll check it out. Put it to the test.
The other thing, Nick, you and I have both been watching Julia on HBO Max.
Yes.
I feel like the actress who's the lead, I should know her. I looked her up. She didn't ring any bells for me.
I looked her up, too, and she showed up on Doctor Who, right?
Something like that. But she's great.
She's fantastic.
And her husband is being played by David Hyde Pierce.
Yes.
You might recognize as Niles from Frasier.
And her best friend is...
Is her best friend or is she, like, sister or something?
No, I think it's best friend.
The person who doesn't know anything about this, ask a quick question. Is this a biographical thing about Julia Child?
Yes.
Yes.
And is it a, pretty real, like, is it based on something?
I don't know if it's based on a book or anything.
I think it's just based on her life. And it's zeroing in on sort of the later part where she...
Yeah, this is not her as a spy or any of that. Basically, she and her husband was a former diplomat. He has been fired or lost his job or whatever.
Yeah.
And now he is, like, getting into art.
Uh-huh.
And so they have moved back to New York?
Yeah.
New York?
Yeah, it's the States. I forget exactly.
I think they're in New York.
I think so, too.
But, basically, she's done her cookbook, and she's like, she does an appearance on the very early PBS show.
What roughly year is this? 60s, 50s, 40s?
Late 50s, I guess.
1800s?
I don't know.
Okay.
Anyway, here's what you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what year it is, but it is very early in TVs. Like, TVs are just starting to be a thing.
Yeah, okay. Like 50s or 60s.
It's early PBS. Like, she goes on a PBS show to spotlight her book, mm-hmm. and she whips up an omelet with a hot plate. And immediately this gives her, and there's a black woman who's working at PBS who becomes, like, her producer.
Mm-hmm.
And basically she decides to, like, make a cooking show.
Okay.
And this is about a cooking show. It's basically a complete flyer. They have no idea it's going to be successful. It seems like a crazy doomed idea.
Well, it seems like a doomed idea, and everyone at the PBS thinks it's a horrible idea and are kind of actively...
All the white men who are running things are just laughing at it. They don't want to do it.
And her producer is Franz Kranz.
Yeah.
Which is, he's amazing.
He's really good in this. It reminds me, though, it's very much about sort of like when you know something's being successful, but you can watch it and you're like, oh, I don't know how this worked. Like, kind of when you watch behind the scenes of movies and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because it does seem like she's not a natural camera person. She's not natural on camera. She's a little awkward. Yeah. The cooking on TV hadn't been done, so they're figuring out how the kitchen stuff works.
Yep.
There's a bit where they get to her set, and she and her friends are just delighted they have running water. They're like, how has this even happened? And,
The introduction of a technology of how to shoot into a bowl was fantastic. How to shoot into a bowl.
It's cool.
Funny because now, like, we have, like, you know, like TikToks and YouTube videos and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Where, you know, like, anybody with their camera can do a pretty polished video of, like, you know, of edited down of just showing how to quick whip something up. But, yeah, these just were not available then. And she was, like, the pioneer.
Yeah.
Well, it's also a little bit of a glimpse into her life and, like, some of the stuff that I didn't know. Like, she was basically footing the bill for the show.
Yeah, well, she had some money from her father, played by James Cromwell.
Who was an ass.
But he's great.
He's great.
James Cromwell is always
Thinks that her husband married her only for her money because he's like... There's a great scene where he's like, why else would you? Because she basically talks about how she's uncomfortable with her looks.
Yep.
And he's like, why else would you? And her husband is like, it's a shame you cannot see in your daughter the thing that I see.
Yeah.
There's some great stuff. Much as I love her care, her husband is played as sort of a 50s husband.
Yeah.
So, like, he is sort of a, what are you doing this TV show? This is ridiculous. It's a waste of time and money. And she and Bebe Neuwirth, who plays her best friend, so it's a Frasier reunion as well.
Yep.
They basically manage to manipulate her husband into thinking it's his idea. And that's how they get it done. But there's some nice bits of... she is a force of nature personality-wise. Like, she gets up and cooks an omelet with a hot plate. Mm-hmm. And she does this... She decides to cook this elaborate French dish on TV. And she's, like, this very, you know, balls-to-the-wall person. But she's also got all this sort of anxiety about who she is and what she's doing. And that's a really tricky balance to hit, both for the creators and for the actors. I think they did a great job with it.
It is. It's the human quality of Julia Child, not just kind of the larger-than-life personality that we get. We get to see her in sort of the quieter moments where she's, like, she never had kids. She couldn't have kids.
Yeah.
And sort of dealing with that, and then, like, the show is her kid in a lot of ways.
Interesting, yeah.
And all, like, the people who pop up who are kind of surrounded are, like, Judith Light plays, like, the head of the...
Right.
I haven't seen Judith Light in forever.
Yeah, I forget the last thing I saw
her. I'm like, that's the boss.
Yeah. It's really good. I'm liking it quite a bit.
Judith Light from Who's the Boss?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, wow. I, until you said that, I was like, I don't know that name.
Yes, I remember her. The Amazon show, the trans show...
Oh,
I think she was in
that. I never watched that.
I think she was in that.
Oh, okay.
I've forgotten the name of it now. I'm blanking on it, but...
Honestly, I didn't even know that actress was still acting.
Yeah, that was the thing she had done. And
who did she play?
She plays Blanche Knopf, which I think was like a head of a publishing house.
Publishing house.
Oh, yeah. I recognize that name.
But she is amazing in it. I mean, everyone in here brings something to the table, and... Sarah Lancashire, who plays Julia Child,
she's great.
Has so much charisma.
Yeah, I did not expect to like this. I'm not a big biopic person, and when I thought it was going to be like a comedy, and I turned it on, and it's like hour long, and it is more of a comedy drama. It's it's definitely a drama as much as anything else, but it's very compelling and very fun.
Is it going to be a mini series, or are we going to like have 5 seasons?
I don't know.
I would imagine it's
probably a mini, but I don't really know.
It's a mini. Yeah.
Episode series season 2, she'll be sent to a deserted island and have to cook her way off of
it. Let's hope not.
They got desperate in the later seasons. The Cylons didn't have a plan for Julia Child.
That's right. Yeah, she's replaced by a cyborg. She has to fight off a cyborg cook.
And I thought it was weird that Bran won the cooking championship when Julia was like really the better character.
Really weird.
But when she flew off on the dragon, though, that was pretty good.
I believe that's it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. And until that time,
yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.